Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager. Carolyn Yeager brings you news and commentary on Holocaust revisionism, World War II history, free speech issues, and more. And now, here's Carolyn.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the final Heretics Hour program of 2011 on this December 19th. I began hosting the Heretics Hour as a weekly program on the Voice of Reason on March 1st, 2010, which means it has been running for 21 months now. Last September 5th, it was expanded to a two-hour live show with a call-in phone line, the only live call-in program on VOR since the ending of Disorganized America with Mischko and Dietrich. I like this format, although I want something done about the music for the breaks. I'm giving a little push there between the opening and closing of the program. The opening and closing is fine, but I think there's too much music in between. I'd like it to be adjusted and changed, maybe even the music changed. But anyway, I appreciate the callers I have had since I've been on this two-hour program, and I hope there will be more participation in 2012. Maybe it will start tonight because I have a great guest and a controversial topic with which to close off the year. In fact, I don't know of a more important subject than the Jewish problem. And then there are those who think the Jewish problem can't be solved until we solve the Christian problem. If you're one of those, you will like this program. If you're not, you might think it should not even be brought up. But I'm doing it, and here to help me with it is Bruce Campbell, who recently gathered all his writings onto his own website, which is jbcampbellextremismonline.com. That's all run together. jbcampbellextremismonline.com. I recommend that you go there. It's a simple website consisting of his many terrific essays and earlier works, such as screenplays. You can read a brief biography of him there, which gives you some idea of his eventful life. He was born in Oak Brook, Illinois, grew up there and in California, went to college mostly in Nevada, had a stint with the British South Africa Police in Rhodesia in the early 70s, fighting terrorism. Then he was involved started the militia movement in the USA in the 90s. But Bruce is not here right yet because he just got off a job. He's an oil drilling. And he's still driving to his destination where he has a motel. And the reason that he's a little late is because the person who was relieving him threw him a curveball, as he said, and couldn't show up until later than he originally said. And so we were talking to Bruce on the phone in his car, but we decided it was just a little too noisy for him to come on yet, and he should arrive at his destination by the second half hour of tonight's two-hour program. So we're going to try to wait until then and bring him on at that time. Although, if I run out of things to say, ladies and gentlemen, we might just call him and let him talk to us while he's driving in his car, which he's willing to do. But we don't want to put too much. We don't want him to have an accident, or we don't want to be responsible for something happening. So I'm going to start out then and say a few things in preparation for him coming on. And that's when we talk about, we're going to talk about, well, Bruce talks a lot about what we need to do to take back this, to get rid of the criminals that are running this country. I was thinking about what resistance can look like for the average person, because here on the Heretics Hour, I'm so often telling people that what we need to do, you know, a lot of people do that. We need to do this. We need to do that. We need to do such and such. And there's very few people actually who are listening and are wondering also what to do. There's only so much people are going to do. But, you know, I thought about the simplest things that people should be doing. And if they would do it, it would make a big difference. But even when I think it through, I realize that these simple things are things that people are not even willing to do. They will tell themselves that they don't need to do these things, probably. But I think this would make a huge difference. And here's my list. One is to stop voting. Now, you don't really have to stop voting, but you should stop voting for any of the major candidates. But I think Bruce is going to, that's one of his things, is that we shouldn't vote. Nobody should go out and vote. But beyond that, and more important, we should stop watching TV. Television has been called Talmud vision. And that's a very good name for it, because that's what it is. When we are watching television, that is totally run by the Jewish element, and they are sending you the messages that they want you to have. So we really have to stop watching it altogether. It's easy for me to say, because I haven't had TV in my home for, since, as I've said this before, since 1982. I don't watch TV at all anymore. In fact, even when I'm at places where they have it, I never even turn it on, because I can't even stand it anymore. The longer you are, you know, the longer you are without something, you get unused to it. Let me put in right here that everything we do is really from habit. We get used to things, and then we think that, it's hard for us to do without it. Simply because we're in the habit of it. We're in the habit of filling up a certain amount of time with television, or we're in the habit of looking at all those images that come on and seeing certain things. I mean, everything is habit. Computer is habit too, and internet is habit. Everything is habit. And so we can't live without developing habits. Habits have a good purpose to them. Also, in that it saves us a lot of, we don't have to think through everything every time we're going to do something. Once we're in the habit of something, we just do it automatically. And we can be thinking about other things while we're doing that. So I'm not saying we shouldn't have habits, but we need to consider what kind of, we need to replace bad habits with habits that are a little better. And watching TV is a bad habit. And not only, if you tell people to quit watching, they'll say, well, I'll just watch a few things, or, and pretty soon they're watching a lot more. So you really have to, even beyond unplug your TV, you really have to just get rid of it. I mean, that's probably a tremendously hard thing for most people to do. Because I know I hear the hosts on VOR saying quite often, well, I was watching TV and I saw this or that. So they're all watching TV. Everybody's watching TV. I'm not. And I know a few other people who don't, but not too many. However, I say that is that if I'm just dreaming now, but if every white person in the world, what we call our white European people, quit watching TV altogether, in 24 hours, and certainly in 1 week, it would make a huge difference. The whole world would look different, not only to us who aren't watching it, but to those who are putting it on and are, using it as their method of reaching us and teaching us and indoctrinating us. So this is something that I think people should think about seriously. Now, along with TV, that which is the most important one, is the same thing with movies and entertainment. You know, this is, we're coming up to New Year's, and I don't know how many of you make New Year's resolutions, but I got in the habit of doing that after I made one, announced one year at a party with friends, something that I thought would never happen. And I said, well, my resolution is I'm going to do this, and I was going to accomplish something. And, you know, at the end of that year, I had a really great beginning in accomplishing that. And I was quite surprised when I realized it. And I said, you know, it's because I announced that and made that very clear, at that time without any frustration or worry, about it, because I really didn't take it all that seriously when I said it, but it turned out I did it. So, New Year's resolutions are good if you don't overdo it. And, if you just make them and then set them aside and don't worry about them. But if you're very clear when you make them. So this would be a good time to, at a new year, to make some of these changes in our lives. So after TV, don't go to movies. And in fact, as a matter of fact, avoid all entertainment. This need to be entertained, this trap that we get into by wanting to sit back and be entertained. It's a real trap. It's a real trap. It's, I'm going to give some suggestions of other things you can be doing, when you don't do this. But movies are the same. They're all, it's all, you know, Jewish Hollywood. There's no reason to want to watch the latest movie except that you want to be entertained. Okay. Well, and then you have to think about your addiction to entertainment and what that is doing to all of us, and including your children. Now, I would say you could read your local newspaper, but don't read the national newspapers. Don't read the big newspapers either. But you would use, I would never suggest not to use the internet, because I'm not saying that we don't want to know what's going on and we don't want to communicate and we don't want to have an impact. So internet, and the computer is very different from TV and movies because it's interactive. And, I do as much writing on the internet as I do reading. So, I'm not just passive. So, and your local newspaper we should keep up with what's going on in our local community, because lots of times there's things that are happening and opportunities that are there that we don't know anything about. This is true of me, because I have kind of gave up on my local community. And that's something I think I'm going to change that in January. It's going to be hard. It's hard to start new things. It's hard to do something that you haven't been doing. And it's also hard to give up doing something that you have been doing. So these things take a real strong decision. But now, people with families, they say, well, I have... I can't tell my kids that we're not going to have a TV. I can't not take my kids to movies. I can't, do this and that. Well, not only that, folks, it's the education system in the schools. If everyone took their children out of the public schooling and homeschool their children in whatever way they can, I realize not everybody can do that, but you could form community groups of homeschooling, there's ways to investigate things that can be done. I have a whole homeschooling section on my website, carolynyeager.net, and you might want to go and look at that. It's not been updated very much in the last few years, but everything, there's a lot there that's a good beginning, and you find it all on the internet, all kinds of information to help you with that. So if we if we got rid of our TVs, and if we took our kids out of the public education and schooled them in some other way, this would make such an impact. It's revolutionary. It would be revolutionary. Why won't we do it? Because we don't have the will. Well, we'd say, well, only a few of us would do that. Well, if the few of us started, if the people who care, those of you who are listening and people that you know who care about this, if they did it, then that would be a good beginning. But you see, even we don't do it. Even we aren't willing to do this. And I would say, forget worrying about sending your kids to college and universities. They don't need that. That's just another part of the whole system that we get trapped in. We can get educated. We can even learn skills. without that. So don't worry about all that, saving all that money or having all that money to do that with. Thinking of all the money we save by avoiding TV, not going to movies. You could take nice vacations with your family, with your children, educational vacations and fun things. And you can, find, like-minded friends for your kids to have if they're not making friends in the public school system. You can, go hiking, camping, gardening, having family celebrations. There's a lot that can be done. And somebody who knows how to do that is Rodney Martin, who I've had on my program, and I hope to have him again, in the coming year, quite often, in fact. He's been having a few, health challenges that he is, hopefully that are getting fixed up. So I don't want to talk too much about that because I don't know how much he wants to say about it. And I don't know that much, but he's been kind of tied up with that sort of a thing, in the last couple of months. But he's got, 3 children and he homeschools. He and his wife homeschool them and they, they spend time with them and their kids are happy and well adjusted and they're not hating it. They like it. So, he knows how to do that. And we will probably be talking about that in the future. Then, you know, we're going to be talking about Christianity tonight, you know, and if you go to church or if you like church, and there's lots of things that, you can do, through church with your family. If you don't, and you can even educate some of your fellow churchgoers a little while you're at it. And then the other thing, that we should be working on is improving our diet because I'm not going to harp on that. But, another thing to stop is to stop eating out. Cook for yourself and get off drugs and get off, prescription drugs as much as possible. Stay out of bars. You know, think in terms of what white European people, what we are, what we like, how we want to be, and get out of this whole Judaized social system that we have all become accustomed to. Back to the habit thing. We're just accustomed to it. All right. Well, I did have that to talk about. Now I've still got about 8 minutes left to go. And I really think, I could talk a little bit about something that Bruce probably doesn't want to talk about, and that is Gordon Duff. I wasn't going to bring it up to him, but I've got some material here. And so I will say this. I'll go ahead with this. When Bruce was on Mike Harris's show on RBN on December 1st, and I listened to that, and it was a pretty good show. he said that that's where he said we don't need government. That is our problem. Electing people and paying them to rule over us is what we don't want to do. Why should we shouldn't be elected? We shouldn't go and vote. We shouldn't go and vote and elect people to pay them to govern, to rule over us. And so I'm going to ask him how do we organize ourselves if we don't have, government. But, in the meantime, Gordon Duff, Mike Harris, I want to talk about Mike Harris for a minute. You know, Mike Harris seems like a nice guy. He has that space on RBN that I had, when I was there, but plus one extra hour. He comes on an hour earlier. He's 2 hours. And, he seems to me to be, I don't know if he understands what he's doing, but he functions kind of like as a shill for Gordon Duff and Veterans Today because he has, about every third day, at least he has somebody, a Veterans Today writer, and they talk a lot about Veterans Today. And he's had Duff, at least twice, and he hasn't had his show for very long, two and a half weeks or something like that. I don't know, 3 weeks. And then he's had, Jim Dean, Gordon's partner there on VT, twice. So, and they're pushing this. So it's kind of like a lot of advertising for Veterans Today. Now on this, Mike Harris had Duff, he had him right after Bruce was on, and then he had him another time, just the other day. And I don't know exactly. I think this is where this material came from, just the program the other day. But Mike Harris talks about Gordon Duff like they're great friends. And he says they're great friends. And this last time he introduced him as, my very good friend, you know, my great friend, Gordon Duff. And I don't think they've been friends. No, they say Gordon says they've known each other for a long time. But the thing is that the person that had that program, that hosted that space of time on RBN before Mike Harris took it over, was the man I talked about before, John Stokes. And John Stokes was inebriated on the last program he was on, because he was let go after that. And Mike Harris was his guest. And so Mike Harris finished the show for John Stokes, and then Mike Harris took over the program after that. Kind of strange, but that's how it worked out. I can understand that he may have just been asked to do it, because he just came across pretty well. So, but John Stokes constantly said that he and Gordon Duff were buddies. They were terrific buddies. They talked on the phone for hours at a time. And he was pushing Veterans Today regularly on his program. And he had Duff as a guest, I do believe, although I didn't listen. I never listened to him. And I don't listen to Harris either, except I've listened to a few of them that I've noticed would might be of interest to me. So, but here we have, and then Duff said about Mike Harris that, we talk for 2 hours at a time on the phone. We can just talk and talk about these things. Where does Gordon Duff get the time to talk for hours to all these talk show hosts? Everybody that has a talk show, he will friendly up to them so that he can get on their show and they'll push VT. I mean, it's worse than what Alex Jones does, because Alex Jones just pretty much sticks. I mean, he does his own thing. He's got his own shows. But this business that I keep hearing, I just find it kind of strange that everybody's just the best friend with Gordon Duff and just talks on the phone with him all the time. And they say how he's got all this inside information and he knows so much. And yet we never really learn anything from it. And when Duff is on, we don't really learn anything either, although he talks around in circles is what he does. So I wanted to bring that up about those two. And but I didn't think that that Bruce would be very comfortable with it. So it's a good thing he hasn't been on yet. I had a chance to bring it up. Well, we will be taking our break in a couple minutes, ladies and gentlemen. And in that time, and when that happens, we're going to talk about why Bruce's idea about government, why we shouldn't vote, and why we don't need to elect these people, and his idea of how bad our government is, which I totally agree with. And then we're going to get into the reasons, which is Jews in government. But as the title of tonight's program relates, he thinks, and there are a lot of people like him out there, maybe not as many who think my way or differently, but a lot of people who blame Christianity for the problems that we're having, that we have developed to have with Jews, with Jewish power. And I don't agree with that. And I'm going to counter that with some ideas of my own. So we'll see what happens with that. I'll just mention here, Kevin McDonald wrote a pretty interesting article a few days ago. It was on the Occidental Observer, called Tim Tebow Phobia, Jewish Fear and Loathing of Christianity. And he was commenting on this Rabbi Hammerman's comments before the Bronco Patriots game, football game yesterday, saying that if the Broncos won, then it would be very bad news for the nation, because the Christians might go on a rampage. They get so excited about it, thinking that now they could fearless and could go and go up bash. What did he say? They were going to go and bash the destroy mosques and bash, do kind of like carry out pogroms or something against the Jews. I mean, he got in trouble for that. And McDonald wrote a good article on it, and I have some comments here. I might bring that up with Bruce. And here we are at our break time. And when we come back, we'll have Bruce Campbell with us, ladies and gentlemen.
We'll be right back with more on The Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Israel's planning to build over 1,000 new settlement homes in East Jerusalem and the West Bank. It's speeding up construction after Palestine won membership to the UN's heritage body in October. Palestinian leaders say peace negotiations are impossible without a settlement freeze. RT's Paula Sleer in Tel Aviv can tell us more. Paula, a turn for the worse, seemingly, between Israelis and the Palestinians. What exactly is being planned?
Well, certainly what we're hearing is that the Israeli government has announced it will be building more than 1,000 housing units across the Green Line on Palestinian land. The Israeli Housing and Construction Ministry says the decision was made last month after it was announced that Palestinians were being accepted into UNESCO, the United Nations Education, Scientific and Cultural Agency. Now, the purpose of the housing units is to try and help alleviate the shortage of accommodation, particularly among young Israeli couples in the Jerusalem area. But no doubt, this announcement will draw the anger of the international community, as indeed have similar announcements in the past. Whenever the Israeli government announced its settlement expansionist policy, the United States, the United Nations, the European Union, as well as the Palestinians, have expressed their anger and growing frustration. Certainly, it does not bode well for any kind of resumption of peace talks between the Israelis and the Palestinians. It sends out a strong message that the Netanyahu government is not interested in sitting down and talking with the Palestinians, while at the same time continuing to build settlements on Palestinian land.
And Paula, this is all despite the landmark prisoner swap between the two that's been completed. Where does this exchange leave the peace process?
Well, the peace process at the moment does not seem particularly hopeful. I mean, while we're talking, Palestinians in the West Bank are celebrating, and this is because of the release last night, Sunday, of 550 Palestinian prisoners from Israeli jails. This was the second phase of an Israeli-Hamas prisoner exchange swap that was carried out back in October. You remember there that the first phase of this prisoner exchange deal started that will ultimately see more than 1,000 Palestinian prisoners released for one Israeli soldier, Gilad Shalit, who has already returned to Israel. Now, there was a short time when clashes broke out shortly before the exchange last night took place. These clashes were between Israeli soldiers and families who were waiting for prisoners to come back. The soldiers were firing tear gas and rubber bullets. The Palestinians were throwing rocks and burning tires. Most of the Palestinians who were released yesterday have returned to the West Bank. They are mostly supporters and members of Fatah, although this was a deal that was carried out with Hamas. So you do have this policy, which seems quite strange to some observers. On the one hand, Israel adhering to a prisoner exchange deal and seemingly wanting to move forward and create some kind of negotiations with.
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com. And now here's Carolyn.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for staying with us through that first half hour, because we do have Bruce here with us now. Hello, Bruce.
Hi, Carolyn.
Well, great to have you. Glad you got to your destination safely.
Thank you. I had a close call. I'll tell you, I got sideways in the ice on the mountain road in Montana on the interstate, 75 miles an hour.
Oh, was that after the show started or before?
No, I mean, after I told you that no problem, all of a sudden I got an ice.
Oh, man. That is good. You know, Mike Connor didn't like the idea of you doing the show while you were driving, and he was right. Oh, well, thank God. You know, you're all right. Now, I think I told the listeners, yes, that we did have this arranged right, but the person who was relieving you at your job kind of threw you a curve and couldn't show up when he said he was, so you had a tight. You didn't have much time to get here, right?
True. I would have made it, but there were a couple of hellacious accidents near Billings, and, I mean, it was horrible.
You must be worn out. There's a big storm going on up there, huh?
Yeah, really bad winds. It's very hard to drive in it, I'll tell you.
Oh, well, I'm just very thankful that you're safe and sound now, my goodness. And thank you so much for trying so hard to get here, to get to the program on time. Well, I spent a half hour talking about a few things I wanted to say, and I talked about your website, which I will repeat, is jbcampbellextremismonline.com, where you have all your essays, and I mentioned your biography and so on, and I'm hearing myself.
We'll plug this in back in. How's that?
Yeah, that's probably better. Thank you. All right. I told him that you were on Mike Harris's show on RBN on December 1st, and that you said then, I want to bring this up before we get into the Christianity thing. We don't need government. That is our problem. Electing people and paying them to rule over us. So I'm saying, if you're against voting, which I've decided this time, for the first time, I'm not going to vote at all. Boy, it simplifies things. I don't even have to think about that. But that's not that it's difficult to go and vote. But I've decided I'm not going to do it. I started voting for whoever was third party or whoever wasn't the main candidates. You know, I voted for libertarians and this and that, knowing that they wouldn't get it. But I didn't, you know, it was some sort of a protest vote. But now I'm just not going to vote for any of them. Now, how do we organize a nation of people without government? You say our government is our problem. We don't want to have a government.
Well, government is our only problem, really. So we have to avoid that. You know, it's a cowardly thing when you stop and think about it, to hire people to do things that we couldn't do ourselves. I mean, no matter how honorable it might seem to, you know, vote for Pat Buchanan or Ron Paul or whoever, you're still voting for somebody to have the power to break the law and to do things that you couldn't do yourself. So it's totally wrong. There's just no moral justification for voting. So we've got to think of a new way to do this. And number one, we don't need a government. The founders did do something good when they started this thing with the Articles of Confederation. They did not provide for a strong central government. But Alexander Hamilton wanted that central bank, that first bank in the United States. And to have a central bank, you have to have a central government. And that's how we got stuck with the Constitution. I'm not a constitutionalist. I don't believe in the Constitution. All it is seven articles about running the government. And there's nothing honorable about the Constitution. The Bill of Rights, you know, Patrick Henry and George Mason and some other guys fought very hard to put that Bill of Rights on there to protect us from the Constitution. So we just got to rethink everything. The Bill of Rights and the Constitution are mortally at odds with each other. The Constitution is for government. The Bill of Rights is for us. But they're totally different. There's no connection. Anyway, so we have to do something new here.
Well, all right. I like the idea of rethinking and, you know, not just tinkering with things, but really going down to the base and saying, what was all this for? Now, if what are you thinking of then? I mean, you know, I'm only thinking in the usual ways. Like, so then if we don't have a federal government, then we have state governments. Do you think we would just function as a lot of smaller areas that are self-governed, sort of like the states are now?
Yeah, I mean, we have to have independent states. Not that state governments are good, you know, but
no, they're not. Step, I was going to say, you know, states have been notoriously corrupt.
Of course, I come from Illinois, so I mean, I know about that.
Oh, so do I. As a matter of fact,
Chicago.
Oops. Well, it looks like either I got lost or Bruce got lost. What's up?
Deal with the state governments, you know, later. But this is going to be a chronic program that our children and the children's children learn to deal with. But we got to start this thing somehow. We got to get rid of this federal government. That's the main issue right now.
Okay. Well, when we talk about getting rid of the government, then we're dealing with the powers that be. And we're talking, of course, that, as you already pointed out, is tied in with central banking. And that's the same powers. And so, you know, both of us are quite aware of the Jewish problem. And the title of this program is there a Christian problem behind the Jewish problem? So let's just speak for a minute about the Jewish problem, which is Jewish power, which you and I have talked about before on my show, and I have talked about it at other times on this show. But it's one thing to keep talking about it, and another thing to really point out what ways can be started to do something about it, because it, as we all know, people are afraid to even use those words and talk about those things. I'm not afraid. We're not afraid here on VOR, and there are some people who aren't afraid, but mostly people are kind of afraid.
Well, of course, they've been afraid of that thing for centuries and centuries. It's always been that way. So we have to change that. And my model is the Russian nationalistic group that used to be called Pamyat, P-A-M-Y-A-T, which meant memories. That's what it meant in Russian, or in English. What memories of Russia before the Jews took over. That's what it meant.
Okay.
And their slogan was, "Save Russia, kill the Jews." That's pretty radical sounding, but then I decided this is the only way to go. And Bobby Fischer, bless his heart, said the same thing 15 years ago. He said, these people have to be wiped out. Now, not all of them, but the ones that make all the horrible policies for this government. And those people have to go. And then we can't send them anyplace. We can't do any. I mean, we can't do what Germany tried to do, which backfired horribly by sending them to Palestine. I mean, they've tried to send them to the Pale of Settlement, where they came from, but that failed because the Operation Barbarossa, failed because of the winter. So that set the whole Russian army coming to the West, and because they couldn't put those Jews in the Pale of Settlement, so they decided to send some of them anyway to Palestine, which is a horrible, horrible thing that, you know, was not a moral thing at all. There was no right to do that, but
yeah.
To be fair,
the National Socialists only sent about at the most 60,000, I think, if I remember right, Jews to Palestine. In the whole time that they were doing that, and the British had already sent like 300,000 or so. So the ones that the Germans sent probably they didn't make that big of a difference.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, it was just they had to send 1,000 The British wouldn't accept them without £1,000 sterling. And the Germans had to make sure all those Jews had £1,000 sterling to get in Palestine.
Anyway. Yeah. Right. Well, okay. Well, let's just say here, let's get it straight that, let's go to your article, Jewish Policy, which I have in front of me now. And, this is the one that I wanted to base tonight's program on. Something that you wrote, I think it was in November sometime. But it's very strong, and you do say some strong things against Christianity in here, which we'll get to. But first, you know, when we talk about what to do about the Jewish power, people never it's not allowed, in a sense, to say, well, we have to get rid of the Jews. It's always like some way that we're going to control the Jews, or we're going to change the Jews, or, you know, one of those things, but not that we're going to get rid of the Jews, because it's pretty, you know, that brings up the idea of genocide and World War II and so on. But this is what we have to think in terms of, and you put this out straight, with no problem, you know, in this article, that our Jewish policy has to be, to get rid of the Jews, basically, right?
Yeah, there's no alternative. I mean,
and you even, you said, and then you finally say, after you give some history and so on, you say, we need a new Jewish policy. Here is mine. Save America, kill the Jews. This comes from what you said about that Russian group, right?
Yeah, based on those guys.
Okay. Well, what happened to them? Did they have any success?
No, they were all wiped out. They were sent to prison. Again, you know,
who sent them to prison? Putin?
I mean, the Russian courts prosecuted them because Jews were still too powerful at that stage of the game. That was back in the early 90s when that happened. And they were still in flux. They were still trying to save their country from this catastrophe. So it was too soon, but still, it was a great idea, great slogan, and I think we should, you know, give it some serious thought here.
Well, let me say here, Bruce, that a lot of people like what you say, but then when they hear things like this, they can't believe that you could say these things if you're serious and be serious, or that you're not being, the FBI is not coming around and checking you out because you say and write these things. How do you answer that? Because I know that there are a lot of people who say this guy is dangerous. This guy, or this guy is not on the up and up. He's an agent, you know, because a few of these other people who've been in the movement and have gotten away with a lot of stuff until we found out that they were working for the feds. And I know you really can't answer that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you just say, well,
no,
yeah.
I mean, you can't prove it. You can't prove a negative, but. You know, I have been visited by the Secret Service and by the FBI. The Secret Service came to my place in 91 in Los Angeles and threatened to kill me if they saw me near George Bush the Elder. I'd written something about him that I didn't like. And then the FBI came to my place in Montana in 96 under false pretenses, and they finally admitted why they were there, because of my book. And but the thing that is... The thing that's uppermost in these guys' minds, I found out from that visit, was my Rhodesian experience. Now, to me, it was nothing, no big deal. It was a great thing that I did for myself and for the Rhodesians, but for the government, for the U.S. government, this does not compute. They don't understand how a guy from California could go over to Rhodesia and join up and, you know, fight and all that stuff. That doesn't make any sense to them. So they think I'm a little crazy. Now, keep in mind also, when I was in Montana, I'm the guy that started the militia movement. And I mistakenly went to Montana to help the new thing called the militias. But I thought, well, I mean, they're starting this thing, so I started the whole thing. So this.
Yeah, this guy.
Montana, I should go up there and help them. So I took with me about, pardon?
I was going to say, hello? I don't know if it's me. The Skype is kind of, maybe you don't hear me. Maybe it's me dropping out, or it's you dropping out every so often, just a little bit. But we'll keep going, and if it doesn't get any better, we might switch to the telephone when we come back from the break.
Okay,
so keep going.
Okay. Anyway, it turns out these people up there that I was trying to help in Montana were working for the FBI. It was a sting operation. The militia of Montana was an FBI mm-hmm. sting operation. I didn't know that at first. And I supplied them with like 15 high quality machine guns. And here the truckman guy had to tell the FBI that I'd provided all these machine guns. And they were actually very frightened of the whole thing. We'd already had Waco. So they didn't want another Waco. So I think the FBI and these other people think that I'm capable of anything, and they don't right now. Maybe at some point they decide to change that idea, but for the time being, they may want some kind of homegrown Osama. They may think that I can help them indicate all these other potential tough guys. I don't care what they think or what they need. I'm going to do what I want to do in my terms. So, that's all I can tell you. I've been a very serious guy for a long, long time. And they don't know exactly what to do about that. I'm pretty careful, Not too careful, but I'm pretty careful. And they haven't been able to nail me with anything, even though they've known about all these machine guns. They didn't choose to do anything about it.
Well, what about, how do you think that knowing all the power that they have and that they can surveil all of us and know what everybody's doing, how do you think that you can get away with killing anybody, let alone killing the Jews? I mean, like you said, those Russians all got put in, sentenced to prison. How can this possibly work? This is why people are suspicious of this kind of talk, even though, It's appealing because the fact is, if we want to look at reality, you can't get rid of people who are in power unless you kill them, in a sense.
Well, that's what Thomas Jefferson had in mind, Patrick. I mean, that's the way it goes, We're only here for a short time, and we have to do the best we can. And, of course, everybody afraid that, if you talk that way, you must be a Fed.
Mm-hmm. That's
well,
right.
Again,
that's...
I mean, if Ariel Sharon says something that's true, it's still true. Forget who I am or forget me. I'm not important. Is what I'm saying correct or is it not correct? As you just admitted, at some point, it's going to have to happen. And you're going to have to stick with your friends. Don't have any strangers involved. I only use your family and friends for these kinds of things, and it's a risk. It's a risk. we're headed for the FEMA camps at this rate. I mean, what are you going to do? So I don't see how we have any choice at the time. I mean, back when I started the militia in the 80s, I started it during Reagan, and everybody said, "What in the heck are you doing? What is this? What is a militia? I don't understand this word." And nobody had heard of it. And then, of course, George Bush became president in 1989. And people said, okay, well, yeah, maybe this guy's kind of dangerous. And then, of course, Clinton. And the Clintons tried to shut it down. The more they did, they tried to shut it down, the bigger it got. So now, we got Bush and then Obama, for God's sake. So it's just getting worse and worse and worse. I was way ahead of the power curve. You can read my screenplays, for God's sakes, on my website. You can see how I've done this back in the 80s. I was coming up with these things back in the 80s when I started the militia movement. So, I got a record. I got a track record. You can, you don't have to do anything. You can read it or forget about it.
Yeah,
I'm
well,
just saying,
I haven't read your screenplays.
Truth is the truth.
I should do that. Well, a militia is a good idea because it's very American. And
let me stop you right there. Now the militia, it was a bad thing. The real militia back in the old days under Washington, and it was not a good thing. They put down the Whiskey Rebellion. They put down the Shays Rebellion. They were a force for evil in the hands of George Washington. All I did was look at these laws and these judges' decisions, sending guys to prison for owning guns and saying, the judge would say, oh, I don't think this gun has anything to do with a well-regulated militia. You go to prison. So I thought, okay, I'm going to jam this militia right down your throat. That's all I did. It was just because of the horrible decisions. The militia, you know, I didn't like it. I didn't like that word. But I thought, well, I got to use it because, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding about the Second Amendment. There's no authority to regulate the militia, well later and poorly regulated. There's nobody authorized to regulate militia. It's a fraud. The Second Amendment is a fraud, and it's been used to disarm us.
Since
1840.
Yeah. What do you suggest? I'm not real clear about what you're suggesting should be done.
Revolution.
Well, how is that supposed to take place? I mean, what is your opinion of Occupy Wall Street?
I'm for it. Phrase. I'm for anything. I'm for anything like that. I mean, the guy, whether or not they're pure, who cares? I mean, they are out there. They're taking the hits. They're not required to be cannon fodder, to have pepper spray or be beat over the head. They're not required. They're doing it. And they're creating the revolutionary movement. It may not be to everybody's liking, but tough. You know, they're doing it.
Don't you think that they're infiltrated? Do you think that the leadership of these Occupy groups are on the up and up? And also, I mean, are they? What kind of people are they? And then, a lot of these people, they're anti-fascist.
There you go. There's the problem right there. Yeah, but there's the problem. There's the problem. Being suspicious of anybody that's doing something. Forget that. Appreciate them for what they're doing, whether it's Anonymous or Occupy or the people in, you know, Texas or California or Washington or New York or who cares? I mean, they're out there doing stuff. And, you know, Mao Zedong says the fish has to swim in the sea. That means the revolutionary. I mean, I'm very anti-communist, but It's a fact. As I say, if Ariel Sharon says something that's true, it's still true. The fish must swim in the sea.
Say that they must that they're doing something. You know, the Bolsheviks were doing something too, and the French Revolution, they were doing something. And that neither one of them was good. They were very bad, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, but I don't think that what the Occupy guys are doing is bad.
Well, we don't know. I mean, we don't know what they were doing.
They're protesting Wall Street. They were protesting.
Well, that's what they say. You know, the Bolsheviks were protesting the terrible policies of the Tsar, which in retrospect were not so bad compared to what their policies turned out to be, which is what I'm saying, that if you don't know what you're getting into.
Yeah, but you see, you could be too cautious. You know, it's too late for caution. Let me tell you, we're about to enter the Halliburton Hotel, the Halliburton Hill.
Well, who do you think that if these... let's say if these Occupy Wall Street people really got some kind of power or something, who would they be installing? What would they be doing? And who would they be doing away with and putting in prison? What do you think?
Well whoever would be better than what we got. You know, you're not going to get perfection. This is America. We have 300 million people, for God's sake. You got to take your chances. These people are brave and they're courageous for being out there in bad weather and getting beat up. I mean, let's appreciate them for what they're doing. Let's stop being so damn critical about, what's their motives? I mean, who's behind them? Who cares? They're out there working. They're out there.
Well, I would say that a lot of so-called revolutions have turned out very badly, and so I think there's. You know, it doesn't mean that...
Including ours. They always do. But that doesn't mean you can't have another revolution. I mean, you got to keep trying. And you got to perfect it. You know, you got to learn from the mistakes. We know enough now who's got to go. We know that the the federal government has got to go. The invisible government's got to go. So, I mean, it's a learning process, and we've learned some other people's
mistakes. Don't you think that these governments, invisible governments and so on, know enough and have enough power and so on? Well, of course they do, in order to co-opt whatever takes place and still be in power when all is said and done at the end of it?
No, I do not. That's why I'm doing this. I mean, otherwise, I might as well forget it. If you're saying they're omnipotent and omniscient, forget it. We're done. I'm saying.
Well, Let me finish.
I've said, how many times have I said this? The Council on Foreign Relations has to be destroyed. That's the number one thing.
All right. With that, we will go to our 1 hour break, and we'll be back in 5 minutes, ladies and gentlemen. Stay with us.
We'll be right back with more on The Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
From FSN, I'm Priscilla Huff with the latest world news. An uncertain transition of power is underway in North Korea following the sudden death of the country's strongman, Kim Jong-il. North Korea's ruling Workers' Party is calling on the nation to unite behind the leadership of his youngest son, Kim Jong-un. North Korea test-fired 2 short-range missiles off its east coast on Sunday, but the government says that was unrelated to Kim Jong-il's death. Analysts are not so sure, as Simon Marks reports from Washington.
As one former U.S. military commander told Monday's New York Times, anyone who says they know what's going on in North Korea is either lying or deceiving themselves. There's enormous uncertainty about whether Kim Jong-un, believed to be in his 20s, has the ability to exercise the levers of power, or whether he'll face challenges from inside the country's elite. John DeLury is a professor of international studies at Seoul's Yonsei University.
This new leadership is under a lot of test right now as they take their first steps in running the country.
North Korea's test firing of missiles right around the time the leadership was adjusting to the news of Kim Jong-il's demise didn't surprise former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Christopher Hill.
Often in these circumstances, they want to show how tough they are to the world.
The Obama administration continues reaching out to its allies in Asia to share information and coordinate policy towards a peninsula without Kim Jong-il.
U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton told reporters she's, quote, deeply concerned about the welfare of the North Korean people following Kim Jong-il's death. She was speaking at the State Department after a previously scheduled meeting with the Japanese foreign minister.
We have been in close touch with our partners in the six-party talks today. We reiterate our hope for improved relations with the people of North Korea and remain deeply concerned about their well-being.
There's lots more about North Korea on our Twitter feed. You'll find us there at Feature Story. In other news, a Libyan military commander has started legal action against the British government, claiming it was complicit in his illegal rendition and torture when he was campaigning against the regime of Colonel Muammar Gaddafi. From FSN's London Bureau, Catherine Drew reports.
Abdul Hakim Belhaj worked with NATO as one of the leaders of the rebel army to overthrow Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi. He now serves as a senior military commander in Tripoli. However, he claims that in 2004, he and his wife were detained in Bangkok and transferred to the Abu Salim jail in Tripoli. He says he was held there for 6 years and often tortured and interrogated by agents from countries including the UK and the US as a suspected Al-Qaeda sympathiser. The UK Foreign Office said it was government policy not to comment on intelligence matters, but said the ongoing detainee inquiry will investigate allegations of whether Britain was involved in or aware of the improper detainment or rendition of detainees held overseas by third parties, including the former Libyan regime. Catherine Drew, London.
This is FSN.
We'll be right back.
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com. And now here's Carolyn.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here with my guest, Bruce Campbell, whose website is jbcampbellextremismonline.com. And we're going to continue with this, and we're going to get into the Christianity. I want to remind you that our phone line is now open. The number is 1-855-477-2283 if you want to talk to Bruce and or ask him anything or discuss anything with him. Now, when we went to the break, Bruce, you had mentioned the Council of Foreign Relations, and this is something that you have been talking about for several years, I know of, at least, that this is the number one target in your mind of what we need to get rid of in this country, the United States of America. But do you think that the Occupy Wall Street group or whoever these people are showing all their dissatisfaction with the banking establishment would do anything about that, would go after that? What?
Well, I mean, I think the Occupy people are basically peaceful, you know, and they're putting themselves in harm's way. Well, they're kind of being like Christians, which, you know, to me is not the way to go. I'm sure they are fully aware of the Council on Foreign Relations. I mean, who would be motivated to go down there and do that would not know about Council on Foreign Relations. I mean, that just makes sense to me that they probably do know about it. But you're not going to beat the Council on Foreign Relations by, occupying the 58th Street. That's not going to do any good. We have to have Caterpillar tractors and bulldoze that thing into oblivion. Because it's made of rock. It's not made of wood. It can't burn. But it's got to be flattened. And everybody that belongs to the Council on Foreign Relations has to be, executed for treason.
Well, don't you have to give them a trial first? I mean, don't you have to bring up charges and go through the whole legal thing? Or
well,
do you just
I'm all for treason trials. Treason trials are good. We should have treason trials. And then, of course, George Bush. I dream about putting a rope around George Bush's neck and hearing the sound of his neck breaking. You know, I've dreamed about this for years, and I want to be the one to do this because I believe he is going to go to prison for war crimes, him and Cheney and Powell and Rice and all the other degenerates who got millions of people killed. Anyway, this is what has to happen in America. Otherwise, we're in total disgrace, and some foreigners are going to come over here and do this, and then, you know, we're going to be nothing. We're going to be just a bunch of bums. So we have to take charge of our own country and wipe out these traitors.
Yeah, but when you say we, and I understand that, I say we all the time too, and so do a lot of other people say we, but who are we talking about? You know, how big is this we? Is this we anything that is capable of doing anything?
Well, sure. I mean, this is America. We got, you know, we have more guns here than we have cars. We got all the means that we need. All we need is the will, and that's been taken away from us by Jewish brainwashing for many, many decades. But it can be brought back. That spark, that will to win, can be brought back with the right words, the right actions, the right leadership. So that's not the problem. And
well,
the
I think
is the resistance. I started the militia, but I don't want to use the word militia anymore. It's a tainted word. It's full of feds. So you don't want to mess around with the militia. It's the resistance now, because the militia was just men. The militia was all men between certain ages. Actually, it was all white men between certain ages. So that's not going to work now. We've got to have the women involved too. We got to have everybody involved in the resistance movement. We're going to shut this thing down. So the Occupy thing is just the beginning. It's just the glimmer of a revolutionary spirit. But the real revolution, the resistance is going to run that.
Well, do you envision a multicultural, free America with free people wandering around governing themselves of all these different nationalities and races that we have here now? Is that what you see?
Well, that's the way America is, you know.
Yes. But these people are pretty well on the I hate to use that word, but it's the only one that comes to my mind, on the teat of the welfare industry. That's what keeps everybody down, you know, it keeps everybody peaceful. And a lot of these people, I mean, there's a huge divide amongst the people that we have who are, you know, in this country and even among all the citizens, let alone the illegal aliens that are here. But let's just talk about the citizens. We've got every kind of diversity here. And are they going to all come together somehow and in love and unity and work together?
We're going to have a terrible armed struggle between us and the Mexicans. No question about that. And the Mexicans got to go. Now, the Mexicans have to go back to Mexico. We can't use them here anymore. It's just not working out right. So they got to go. But anyway, I'm not promoting any kind of multiculturalism. I mean, I'll be with the white guys. You know, that's who I am.
Well, that's Mexicans, good because what are these people going to do when there's no government to take care of them? I don't want to sound too bad, but you know, like all of the black people, where so many of them need to have the government looking out for them.
Well,
what's
going
to happen to them?
That's just their way in Africa. That's just their way here. There's just no denying that fact.
Mm-hmm.
That's their way. We're going to have our hands full. I mean, we got to go against the stinking feds. We got to go against the people who want to kill white people. We're going to have our hands full. But we have the wherewithal. We have the means to do this. We just need that green light, which is what I'm doing now. Somebody's got to give the green light, and I guess I'm going to do it.
I think you are honestly doing that. I think you are honestly, that's my feeling, willing to say I'll talk about it and try to get people roused up and ready to know that it's time to do something. I think that is your aim, because you certainly can't do it yourself, and you can't, you can't create divisions and lead them on a charge on Washington or anything like that. So, you know, I think this is your purpose. Well, let's get into the Christianity thing. In this article that you wrote on your website, the title of it is Jewish Policy. It's very strong. And about in the middle of it here, you say, probably for the same reason, we're talking about why nobody has wiped out their Jewish controllers yet in several countries you mentioned. Then you say, what is the common factor between us and the Russians that has protected the Jews? The factor is Christianity. And then you go on to say that the Russians were neutralized by a combination of Jewish terror and Jewish Christianity. You know, I really disagree with that, but I would say it's the common factor is law and moral law that has protected the Jews, because we are a people of law, and we are people who are moral, and we cannot understand that this is a Jewish problem rather than, you know, because the way it's presented to us. And so people are held back from doing what needs to be done by their idea of morality.
Well, you say law and morals, but that's a function of Christianity. It's a break, the governor. Christianity is what has protected the Jews. It's prevented us from wiping them out. I mean, any sane racial group such as ours would centuries ago have wiped out these troublesome people.
Well,
so predatory. So, but it's the Christianity.
Well, Christians have actually gone after the Jews many times in history. It was the Christians distinctly.
Let's not confuse. You see, I don't want you to confuse Gentiles with Christians.
No, it was Christian Gentiles, because of their Christianity, that they objected to the Jews.
I'm familiar. I know the history, but that's been kind of like a vigilante thing, but it has not ever been a policy, except in Spain.
Well, I think it was policy back in the early days, but Christianity has changed. Christian churches have changed. Christian churches have become infiltrated by Jewish thinking in the same way our whole society has. So in that sense, you can't blame it on Christianity. Christianity is a victim. It's another victim of Jewish terror.
Let's get much more basic than that. You can't do that. That's not the here. Christianity has a terrible role model problem. The founder surrendered and allowed himself to be tortured to death and, you know, whatever. He gave up. And all his followers were wiped out, every one of them. So this is a very bad thing. Now, what is the symbol of Christianity? It's the cross. What is the cross? Well, the cross is the instrument of his torture and murder. Now, can you imagine anything as sick as having this horrible symbol as your symbol? It means surrender to the Jews. It means the Jews win.
Okay, Bruce, let me say something. I don't think that Jesus Christ would have chosen the cross for the symbol. But that has been made into a kind of a symbol by the church, which was formed many years later, 300 years later, when they had
Jesus
Council of Nicaea.
Death.
Well, Jesus, now wait a minute. Let me wait a minute. Let me say this. Jesus knew that he could not. He didn't have the power over these the Roman government and the Jewish powers structure there, and that if his disciples had Peter pulled out his sword and tried to defend him, he would just be killed himself, and they would all be killed, and that wasn't the purpose. And
he knew that his death would have some meaning.
You're not being accurate here.
You're making it into a little
tussle when it had a great deal more meaning than that. So I don't think that.
In what way does it have more meaning? Well, what kind of meaning does it have to you? Sacrifice? What? Deliberate sacrifice? And what's the meaning of it? I'm seeing the meaning of
Jesus. Jesus went up. Wait a minute. Jesus went up against the powers of his day extremely bravely. But you see, now you're interrupting me. Now, hold on. He went up against the powers of his day very bravely. He had a few followers, and then the followers, he had a lot of followers, but they were just following. But they were impressed, and they liked it. And he was very brave, and he didn't ever back down. But when that time came, he knew that this was what was going to happen, and that it would have, I believe he knew that it would have great effect, for generations afterward and give great strength to a lot of people.
What was the effect? The effect was lost to Jews and to communism and to whoever pushes you around. The Christians do not resist. This is
Christians
the whole problem.
Do resist. You're wrong. And what I want to say, wait.
Today?
What I want to say is that today, if you're looking for resistance, you will find more resistance among a large part of the Christian community against Jewish power. Not all of them, but a lot of them. Let me ask you then, where are your followers in this? Who are a fellow heathens, and I'm not against heathens and pagans. I think everybody should follow their own religious beliefs, the ones that they like and are comfortable with.
You're off in a different direction here. Where is one example of Christians going against Jews today? Please.
Oh, please. I'm not talking about organized churches. I'm talking about individuals.
Yeah, well, the problem is that there is no anti-Jewish movement in any Christian denomination.
Well, the denominations are all co-opted, just like the governments are co-opted. Come on, Bruce, everything is co-opted.
This is why we're talking about
Jewish power, and you're trying to blame it on Christianity, that the reason that Jews have gotten all this power is because somehow Christianity was created by them to allow this.
Who was Saul of Tarsus?
Oh, don't
who
bring
was
that.
Saul of Tarsus? Come on. It was created by them. Of course it was created. It was a controlled opposition. It's the fake opposition.
Well, see, now you're starting to sound a little strange. You're starting to sound weird.
Not to a lot of people. You know, a lot of people understand this. Now, as I say, Lenin started the controlled opposition with all the trust in Russia because it was based on what the Jews did with Christianity. It was totally controllable. Christians can't withstand Jewish demands. They cannot deal with Jews because they're God's
chosen
people.
Neither can anybody else. That's not the reason.
Who else does?
You say, I don't care about anything else.
The Gentile has been destroyed by Christianity.
Well, the Gentiles as a whole are not, whether a Christian or not, are acceding to Jewish demands. But we have to understand, and you know yourself how clever Jews are, and that everything they do is devious. They use devious means, and white folks and Christians alike do not think that way. We're not devious.
And the most devious thing of all is Christianity.
It's
not their deal. You know, they pretend to hate Christianity. As you said, oh, they hate Christianity. How can you say that it's on their side? They hate Gentiles, but they love Christianity because that's what weakens us so that we can't resist them. You know, those whom the Jews destroy, they first make Christians. Because once you're Christianized, you can't withstand them. You can't deal with them once you're a Christian. You're done.
You are ignoring the fact that throughout the centuries, since the beginning of Christianity, the Christians have thrown out the Jews time and time and time again. That's why the Jews hate the Christians and fear the Christians. And you said they don't ever fear the Christians. They love Christianity because they created it and control it. That's just not historically accurate. Okay,
no,
but it is a fact.
Now in our lifetime, that's the way it is.
Let's talk about
that's
today.
The way it is now.
I agree with what's happening today, but there are an awful lot of Christians still who do not fit that picture that you're painting. But the major churches do, but even the Catholic Church, I believe, does not want to go along with the Jews. But there are a lot of reasons that they are forced to, because Jews control the media, and the media controls everything.
Okay. I know that, but when I'm talking about Christianity, and I'm going to here to tell you that Christianity does not have a program for victory. In fact, Christianity is a program for defeat.
Today's Christianity doesn't have a program.
Look what happened to Jesus. That's the whole deal. What happened
to
Jesus?
Well, you keep saying you want to come up. Let's come up to today, and then you go back then. Let's stick with what we're – let's do this in an intelligent way here. If we're going to stick with today, we're up to today, and what to do today about it, I will say that if you would – like you said – okay, let me see if I can find that – where you said somewhere that first the first step – here it is. The first step, this is toward the end of your article, toward de-Judaizing America is the total rejection of all religion, specifically Christianity, by those who will do the hard work against the Jews. All right. So you're saying that you want to, we have to reject all religion by those
all
who are going to do the
hard work.
How do you know who is the... Okay, well, so you don't like religion. I understand that. You know, I understand.
Well, it's mind control. It always benefits the government.
Well, why pick on Christianity specifically?
Always support the government. Look at what FEMA's doing with the preachers. They're getting all the preachers to help them with the malcontents.
Well, the preachers and the churches are one thing.
Way.
Yeah, but look at here. If you're going to find the people who are going to do the hard work against the Jews, you're going to find a lot of Christians who will be willing to do that. Sorry to tell you that, but it's the truth.
I don't doubt it at all.
And then there's such a thing called...
I'd be happy if that were true, but I haven't seen that in all my 65 years on this earth.
There's such a thing called Christian identity. Oh, well, I know a lot of them.
Let's not go there. Oh, God. Listen, Christian identities, and I have a lot of friends who ex-friends, for Christian identity. But these guys are totally insane. They think that they're the Hebrews of the Old Testament. You know, we've got these fakers from Khazaria. We say, oh, they're fakers. But these Christian identities, they think they're the Hebrews. That is totally insane.
Well, it is to you, but they are, okay, we won't go there because I don't want to be arguing about that. But I will tell you that these people will fight against the Jews.
Yeah, they'll fight against you too, because you're them. I mean, let me tell you, they're a bad bunch of guys. I don't like the Christian identities at all.
I didn't figure you did.
I have too much experience with them.
Well, all right. So let's say now that after you say that, you that's about my argument there. That I know that there are a lot of people who profess Christianity and they're serious about it, and they're very much against the Jews. I mean, that's just a fact. For you to say you've never seen any, you don't know of any, you never heard of that's there's something wrong with that, Bruce, because that just doesn't fit. The facts.
Well,
so you
again,
reject
like
those
an example.
People.
Give me one example of some hardcore Christian who's willing to go against the Jews.
They're not well known people. They're just
that goes against
people.
The whole faith. I mean that's cognitive dissonance that goes against the whole Christian idea. So how can they be hardcore against the Jews? Jesus wasn't against the Jews. He couldn't. He wouldn't
he
even
too.
Go against them. No,
well, that's what he did. He that's what his whole life was about.
Oh, please. Well, we know about 3 days. You know, come on, his whole life. What do you mean, his whole life? He wasn't against them. He's a Jew. He was a Jew himself. What are you talking about? All his followers were Jewish rebels. Saul of Tarsus was a member of the Sanhedrin.
Well, they were rebels. They were rebels. They went up against the Jewish power structure.
I know, but it's all Jewish. I'm trying to say the whole Christian thing is based on Judaism. We cannot win with this.
Let me go to this then. How do you think that you are going to get rid of all religion and all these people, and they're going to, and this is going to be the people who are going to do the job?
You know, a lot of these Christians are would just dearly love to get out of that racket, but they're so. They've been raised in it since childhood. They're slaves to it, and they would love to get away from it. But somebody's got to be able to tell them it's okay to get away from it. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to dedicate the rest of my life to liberating people from religion, especially Christianity, because it is so corrosive and so destructive, self-destructive.
Well, what do you think you're going to end up with when people don't have any religion?
A bunch of happy heathens like me.
Yeah, you think that that's what makes you the way you are because you don't have a religion? Or is it other things that make you the way you are? No, that isn't
religion,
what makes you the way you are.
Religion is mind control. It is always mind control, whether it's Islam, Judaism, Christianity, Hinduism. It's all mind control to keep people under control. And we have to reject this totally.
Yeah, but we've had people. We've always had people, Bruce. Smart, intelligent, and sincere people who have been talking against religion, and they never get anywhere with it. They don't get very far anyway with it, do they? It's always a very small following.
I know they irritate, and they you got Madeline Murray O'Hare and her obnoxious.
Well, no, there's other people.
I know, but still, it's an intellectual thing. And we have to appeal to people's intellect because Christianity is the cancer of the intellect. And it just destroys your thought processes because it makes you support Judaism. We can't beat Judaism as Christians. That's my main message here. We got to abandon Christianity to defeat.
Why do you say all religion and then you go right to Christianity and forget about the others?
Which one? The worst
no, it isn't, because Buddhism and Hinduism and so on are far more passive religions.
I'm talking about the white man. I'm talking about the Gentile, the one that is wiped us
out. Well, now, first you have to decide whether we're talking about our multicultural state or whether you're talking about
talking about white people.
Look, well, I'll talk about white people.
Christianity has destroyed the white man.
And what have the other religions done to the other people?
Well, same basic, you know, Judaism is insanity, and the Jews can operate with insanity. We can't. Islam.
You know, I think that most people, even Jesus talked about people as sheep, because he knew most people are sheep. People are most, except, see, you are a rare kind of person. Even I am rare. Because most people are just, they don't want to rock the boat. They just want to live and exist and follow along and have families and so on. Okay, we'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, in a few minutes to continue our...
We'll be right back with more on The Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
A mystery to the world. What now for North Korea with its leader Kim Jong-il gone? This massive military parade was held in 2008 to mark North Korea's 60th anniversary. General Kim Jong-il wasn't there to greet the crowd. Reports suggested he suffered a stroke. In 2003, reports claimed Kim Jong-il died of diabetes and had been replaced in public by stand-ins hired previously as a security measure. He never spoke to the media, had a profound fear of flying, and ate with special chopsticks which could detect poison. Rumors have surrounded the so-called supreme leader throughout his life, beginning with birth. According to one source, he was born in the Soviet Union in 1941 during his father's exile, while Kim Jong-il's official biography claims his birth was heralded by the appearance of a double rainbow.
Our people take pride in the fact that they are blessed with great leaders from generation to generation.
The leader of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea since 1994, he succeeded his father, Kim Il-sung, keeping Korea close to the world. Kim Jong-il was also named Supreme Commander of the People's Army, one of the largest in the world, with 1 million active troops and over 4 million reservists. It's believed enormous funds allocated to its military might ate up North Korea's resources needed to fight famine and other social problems. But Kim Jong-il and his regime tried to put on a different show when allowing the globe a glimpse inside.
Our father, the General Kim Jong-il, thank you. Thank you so much.
After the Korean War, the demilitarized zone was drawn up, sending North and South Korea in two very different directions. Decades on, the North remains a closed communist state, the South a modern democracy and innovative success story. North Korea has caused global outrage in recent years, testing patience by carrying out underground nuclear tests and short-range missile launches, leading to U.S. and U.N. financial and military sanctions.
It is now not a matter of the United States and North Korea. It is really a matter of the region saying to North Korea that it has to change its behavior.
Russia has tried to be a mediator for peace on the peninsula by pushing for negotiations.
In the Asia-Pacific region, there's serious potential for conflict, and there's no alternative but to set up dialogue and improve understanding between the sides.
In 2010, new buzz blew up around the North with talk of the possible next leader. That's when Kim Jong-un became a four-star general and first moved into line to take over for his father. November saw tensions reach its highest point in decades after the North launched an artillery strike that left 4 dead.
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com. And now here's Carolyn.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am Carolyn Yeager, and my guest is Bruce Campbell, whose website is jbcampbellextremismonline.com, which has a lot of very good essays there, which I would recommend you to read, and also his screenplays, which I'm going to have to go and read some of them, see what he came up with for some solutions for these modern times we're living in. We have been going back and forth talking about is Christianity the problem behind the Jewish problem? And we haven't talked probably as much about the Jewish problem as we should, but I think that's fairly well, we're implicating that it's very serious and something has to be done about it. And we've been going back and forth between modern days and olden times, which gets a little a little all over the place, a little, and this is, as our producer just said, a huge topic and hard to cover it all. But I'm going to go to the to that last part of your article, Bruce, in which you say Judaism is a catastrophic plague on humanity. The plague must be wiped out in totality. Or are you trying to kind of rouse people there by making it clear how serious it is? But I totally agree with that. And then you say the first step is to speak the unspeakable. I agree. And plant the seed of rebellion against the Jews. That's what this is, a suggestion for a new Jewish policy. That's how you ended this article. So how do we plant the seed of rebellion against the Jews? You say that's the first step.
You got to start with some pretty inflammatory rhetoric to get people's attention. My writing is pretty inflammatory, and the things I say. So I'm trying to get people off dead center.
Well, there you go. There you go. I also think we have to be more inflammatory. I think our speech has to be stronger, more aggressive, more angry. We need to name names, speak about things, point it out very strongly. But most people don't. And I hear people in this so-called movement constantly saying, we don't want to offend everyone. We don't want to offend all those moderate white people out there and so on. I mean, everybody's got their reasons for not doing it. And I think that's why we just sit on the fence and we really need to do it. So I agree with you there. I'm all for you in that area. But what do you say about the fact that people don't want to do it and feel that it's too much or it's in bad taste or whatever? And then again, they will also, like we were talking about earlier, suspect you of not being a real person, not being someone that can be relied upon if you talk too strongly. Like, well, you must be out there just to pull out the those who agree with you and make them visible to the feds. You know how that goes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, we're in kind of what do they call it back in the 1940, the phony war, the Blitzkrieg, when we were in between the peaceful phase and the violent phase. And we're right on the cusp now of the violent phase. I think the peaceful phase is ending. It's pretty clear now that this National Defense Authorization Act has been passed with the allowance to pick up Americans and send them off to Guantanamo. So it's going to take a little while for that to sink in, and maybe a few disappearances and people starting to get a little scared and saying, oh, my God, this could happen to me. And then at that stage, everything changes. We go from the theoretical into the practical. So I'm just, ahead of the power curve. I've always been ahead of the power curve. I'm just saying, here's where we're going. So anybody who stops you at a roadblock has got to get blown away. There's no excuse for a roadblock now. Now that we know that we're likely to be picked up and disappeared, 2 weeks ago, okay, we could stop at a roadblock and show our ID and whatever, but not anymore.
I've never run into a roadblock. Where are these roadblocks?
Well, Tennessee had a bunch of them a couple of months ago, or about a month ago. TSA was running them in Tennessee.
For what?
You do see them all over the place. I mean, in Lompoc, California, my wife and I managed to avoid 3 roadblocks. Every Friday night, they put up the roadblocks. Okay, but that was, you know, then. But now we have this Jewish NDA Act that's threatening to wipe us out. So it's a whole different deal now. We're not allowed to stop at roadblocks anymore. You know, we've got to fight our way out. That's what I'm saying. And same with somebody comes to your house at 3 o'clock in the morning. You answer with a shotgun full of 00 buck. That's what you do. Because they've changed the rules. They've taken away our peaceful options. Now we have to fight. Because we could disappear. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to see that. It doesn't take some, you know, is this guy on the level? Is he for real or is he a Fed? Oh, come on. Wake up. Grow up. Stop making these excuses. It's like Christianity is an excuse to do nothing. Same with this federal thing. Oh, is this guy a Fed? Oh, my God, he might be a Fed. Oh, come on. Is it true or not? It doesn't matter if he's a Fed. If Ariel Sharon says something it's true, it's still true. Come on. Let's be men. Let's be grown-ups here.
Yeah, well, for me, the part that I can agree with is to speak the unspeakable. That, I think, is extremely important, and that, I think, more people need to start doing, and I'm very disappointed that more of our people don't do it. And even then, you know, you get all kinds of stuff come down on your head. But it's still, I think the more people hear, I was talking earlier before you came on about habit. And we're in the habit of hearing things spoken a certain way and carefully, and, you know, we have this political correctness. But if people got more used to hearing the word Jew and the words Jewish power and talking about these people, talking about the Council of Foreign Relations, naming all these names, tying it all together, oh, what happened in Russia, what the Jews did in Germany, more and more and more of this. You might think, well, we're getting bored with all this, but it's repetition is very important. And, therefore they got more used to hearing that. It wouldn't shock them so much. And, it would become more, normal. That's really the way these things go.
Well, I'm the guy that put the word Jew on the internet because up until 2006, Jeff Rentz, of course, he was kind of the king of the internet in those days. He wouldn't let me say those words. But once I wrote the thing called Jewish Rule, which I have on my website too, that changed everything. That opened up the whole deal. And from then on, people started saying Jew instead of Zionist or Jewish person or whatever the wimpy word was.
Well, there's an awful lot of them that still say Zionist. They won't say Jew. They still say Zionist.
Yeah, I know. But there's a lot of people who talk about the Jews now. And that never happened before I got Jewish Rule online.
Well, that's very good.
I did the same thing.
Well, when I read those things by you and for the first time, you know, it just really stirred me up. I'll tell you, I liked hearing it. I liked it. I said, oh, this is great. And I know a lot of people think your writing is real great. But when they talk, you know, they'll come on to talk shows. We haven't had a caller. And people, you can call in still at 855-477-2283. But they call in and they say, oh, I really like what you're saying, Bruce. And I agree with you and this and that. But then they won't say the word Jew either, even when they're talking about it. But again, I think it is this, we have to get people used to it. And that's
why. Even the Nazis couldn't do it. They had to use the word anti-Semitism. That was a basic mistake the Nazis made. They talked about the Semites. They weren't Semites. But anyway, I mean, it's the fear of the Jews.
Well, I don't know. In Mein Kampf, Hitler used the Jew all the time, the word Jew all the time. But maybe I can't think in terms of reading. I know Goebbels used the word Jew, but maybe sometimes they use the word Semite also.
Yeah. Well, it's just a reluctance because it's an ugly word. You know, it's an ugly word. The Jews always say they don't want us to use the word Jew. Only Jews can use the word Jew. But a non-Jew must never say the word Jew. It offends them. They're all tough. You know, we're going to use the word because that's what they are. That's what they call themselves.
Okay, Bruce, we've got a caller. So let's take the call. Yeah. Well, hello, caller. What is your name and where are you from?
Well, this is Hadding in Florida.
Well, hi, Hadding.
I think you get a lot farther talking to people about the Jews and what they've been doing and race problem and things like this if you're not also talking about, violence and, violent rebellion and all this stuff. If you deal with the facts first, get people's outlook on the world right, and let them decide at some future date if they want to do something about it. Otherwise,
You're not required to talk about violence, but you should do what you just said. You should speak out about the facts as you understand them about Jews. Guys like me can handle the violence part. But if you're not comfortable by all means, don't do it.
I always had the impression about the militia movement that they had an absolute phobia about being perceived as racist. And they actually restricted their own freedom of speech for that purpose. It's as if the fact that they were, parading around in camouflage fatigues and carrying weapons and making a big show of that made it impossible for them to talk about anything else.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, let's be realistic. I started a thing really in late 88, early 89. And it just exploded. Now, there was not the education about Jews or race or anything that could go with it. But at that point, all it was guns. That's all it was, because the Hillary and Bill were taking our guns away. So it didn't last after Oklahoma City. That's what killed the militia, which it was meant to do. So it only lasted for a few years, and there wasn't the educational opportunities for the people at the time. But things have changed. Now more people are much more aware of things.
I never saw so many stridently anti-racist white men as in that so-called militia movement, judging from what they say.
I started men only because of the feminist movement was destroying the men of this country. And I said the militia is only men. That's how that happened. But, that was just a basic fundamental thing that had to be changed. But one thing at a time. It didn't have time with Oklahoma City to get any more sophisticated than that.
I want to say something about the Christianity. Christianity really isn't all Jewish. There's a tremendous amount of Greek influence in Christianity. Schopenhauer said that Christianity was Platonism for the masses. I think that's largely true. There's a lot of Greek philosophy in it. I think the problem that we have today is not really Christianity as such, but the fact that there is no contrary masculine influence in our society. It used to be you had the church that encouraged people to be meek and mild and forgiving and all this, but you also had your secular powers that said, well, all that's fine, but I'm going to look out for these political interests, for the national interests or whatever. It's like Hitler. He had the churches stay strictly out of politics. And if the clergymen that didn't do that very often ended up in a concentration camp. And in the medieval period, I'm sure the kings also, they would do whatever they thought they needed to do. After all, if it was over, they'd say, bless me, Father, for I have sinned, or whatever. They could do whatever they had to do in spite of the Christian preachings because they had that masculine authority apart from the church. And we don't have any authority right now standing up for the interests of our race that has any moral sanction or even without any moral sanction of any significance.
That's very true.
So it's just this lack of balance. We have all this feminine influence and nothing masculine.
And it's not Christianity that did that, is it? Is it, Hanning? It's our government's being taken over by liberalism, which the Jews are behind.
Jewish mass media.
As he says, Christianity was a very emasculating influence. It was not a warlike.
No, it was a civilizing influence, too. It wasn't, do we want to just be a bunch of warriors?
That's not good enough when you're talking about going against the Jews or the Romans. You have to have a little muscle and some willingness to use your sword. But they didn't have that with the Christians.
Well, it's not up to the church to create the muscle. It's up to the people. And if the people aren't doing it, you can't blame. It's not the church that's stopping them. We have one more caller.
Thank you.
Hanning, you can stay on the line. You can stay on the line. Let's take this other caller and see who it is. Hello, caller. What's your name? Where are you from?
Hi, Carolyn. Hi, Bruce. It's John Kaminsky in Florida.
Well, hi, John.
Carolyn, I wanted to tell you that I really appreciate the fantastic historical work that you've done on Germany and the Holocaust and World War II. But I have to inform you that you're operating with faulty information in the nature of subjective propaganda on the period you claim to be an expert about, I think, which is the 300-year period of the creation of the Bible, which culminated in a vote to name the God Jesus Christ.
Well, yeah, you're talking about the councils.
I have listened. Don't interrupt. I have listened to. I've listened to you interrupt Bruce throughout the whole show, and I just wanted to tell you that you could really learn something about your own religion that you don't know if you just listen to what he had to say instead of interrupting.
I've already listened to Bruce.
See you later.
Okay. Bruce and I have already discussed this, and I know what Bruce is what Bruce is saying. So you know, I wanted to get in something else, another position on that too, because we need to have both positions here. Well, Hanning, what do you think about that? And Bruce, what do you think about John's call?
I'm not sure exactly what his point was.
I don't either, but. What do you think, Bruce?
He made his point. So I'm not gonna comment on it this time.
Well, all right. We've still got some 10 minutes here, or 8 minutes. So let's see. What did you have anything more you wanted to say, Hanning?
Not that comes to my mind right now. No, I just I was about to leave, and then you said stay on the line. Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, you can go if you want. So where do we stand, Bruce? Do you have anything more, any more helpful things to say about what we should be doing? It really doesn't boil down to what happened, back then with Jesus or not with Jesus. What it boils down to is, are Christians the enemy today of doing something about Jewish power, or are they not? And I'm just trying to say that organized and established churches have acquiesced to Jewish power, but not all, but Christian, many, many, many Christians at the lower level have not.
Well, what we're faced with now, though, now that the Jews have given us this new detention law, which means, you know, no trial, no charge, no lawyer, no appeal, no telephone call, no nothing. You disappear. So the Jews have done this, whether it's Feinstein or Boxer or Schumer or Levin or Lieberman, or who the hell cares? It's a Jewish deal. They've inserted the police and the military between us and them. So unfortunately, we're going to have to deal with the police and military and the Blackwater goons at these roadblocks. This is a fact of life. We don't have to go to the airport because we don't have to fly. We can drive. I drive everywhere. I drive every place, across the country, back and forth, back and forth. I drive. I will not go to the airport. But now we're going to be hit with roadblocks on the interstates going to Safeway. So the message is we're going to have to start shooting. There's no getting around it. And the Christians are going to have to grow up and stop being such goody-two-shoes and be willing to defend themselves and to wipe out anybody who wants to enforce Jewish law on us. Now, that's a big, tall order.
We live in a very secular society. And so to say that the Christians need to grow up and do this, I don't know why you don't just say, you know, the Americans need to, the citizens or whatever, need to grow up and face this. Why don't you put it
that
way?
It's not the fact that we're secular. It's the fact that we are all basically been infected with Christianity as children. You know, we may have grown out of it. We may have said, oh, I don't want to be around that stuff anymore. I don't like it. But the effect has been devastating. Just the bacillus that has been infected into us has weakened us and prevented us from defending ourselves and our women and children. It's Christianity that's done this. It's not the natural way. Our natural way is to fight. But it's been taken away from us by this stinking religion. Let's grow up and reject it all.
And you... what about the Muslims in this country? They're supposed to be such great fighters. Are they standing up for something? Are they going to stand up and fight against these laws? Or do they not care about them?
They don't belong here. You know, they don't belong here. They need to go home. But we've made their home so unlivable by letting the Jews run them out that, you know, fair play means they got to stay here for a while until they can go home. But this is not a Muslim country. They have no business here. Let's face it. You know, Jews have no business here.
Okay, this is not a Muslim country. You don't want it to be. It is not a Buddhist country, and it's not of this, and it's, and you don't want it to be a Catholic or a Christian country. So what is it going to be? You've got
a heathen country. It should be a heathen country.
You know, America has never been a heathen country. Never.
Well,
how are you
going to
turn it into one?
By liberating people from this horrible mind control. They'd love to get out of it if they could. They just don't know that they could. So my mission, and it should be our mission, to liberate people from this horrible mind control.
Well, then you should start a group that's doing that. I mean, either we've got to liberate people from Christianity, or we've got to liberate people from Judaism. I think we need to liberate people from Judaism. Yes, Mike would like to jump in the last few minutes. Come on in, Mike.
Hi there. It's been a really lively discussion tonight. I had a lot of thoughts. I was going to bring up something about the theology. I don't think you really represented the theology of the crucifixion very well. But I really won't have time to go into that. So I'll just say one short thing, and that is this, is that I think that the Jewish power structure, organized Jewry, can be defeated. I think that is actually a feasible, plausible goal. And I think that every time Abe Foxman flips out over something, he's sweating like a cornered animal. I think these guys are a lot weaker than you think. On the other hand, I don't think Christianity is going out. I don't think getting rid of Christianity is on the table. I think it's been around for 2,000 years, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was around for 2,000 more. That's all I'm going to say, and I'll let you have at it. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Mike. It's Mike Connor. Well, I agree that I don't see the end of Christianity, and I don't see that while you don't like it, Bruce, that you have any way that you're going to get people to let go of it, and you don't have too many people on your side there.
What I was trying to do with the militia was to wipe out the Council on Foreign Relations. That was my little pet project to try to get some guys to help me, since I did try to kill David Rockefeller in 1980 and was caught. And mm-hmm. You know, I've written about that. It's on my website. But I was trying to start a group to go against the Council on Foreign Relations, and that's the whole purpose of my militia experience. So I don't need a lot of people. You know, we don't need a lot of people, and I don't care if 90% of the Christians don't drop their stupid mind control. But a certain percentage, I believe, is going to do it, because it just doesn't. It's not relevant anymore. It's not relevant in a fight against the Jews. You cannot defeat or even go against a Jew as a Christian. You're not allowed to.
That's not true. That's not true. That's just not true, Bruce. But that's okay. You can go ahead and think that. And I agree that it doesn't take a lot. It takes committed people who are working closely and intelligently together. I don't see why it makes any difference what their religion is if they really want the same aim, if they have the same aim that you do. But you seem to have two aims. You want to get rid of the Jewish control, and you want to get rid of Christianity which you dislike so much.
Christianity is Judaism for Gentiles. Don't you understand that?
No, I don't.
Christianity is a form of Judaism for Gentiles. Come on, that's what it is. That's our version of Judaism. That's how we're controlled.
Well, I don't. Okay. All right, I don't agree with that, but that's see, I knew. Well, when we started, we knew we disagreed, and that's why I thought it would be a good program. Well, now, what closing remarks would you like to make? Because the music's going to come on very quickly. I really am glad that you came on. I like the work that you do, Bruce. You know, I'm a fan of yours. I like your writing. And there we go. Thanks for being on the program.
Howard.
Thanks for listening. The Heretics Hour returns Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.